Yeah.
So.
I think so. Good, sorry. Okay.
You ready?
Yes.
Yeah.
In 9.1.2, it says the officer of jurisdiction of church is under which management committee is present. That's a, what level is that?
9.1.2. Okay.
Class 3, class 2, class 1. Which, if it's class 3, you can't read. You can't recite.
I'll let you turn for clarification. Is that thing that you likely get paid to what level?
Yeah, this might have a little more general than that.
Absolutely.
Come in now. And then you're gonna have, are you gonna change penalty for a second offense? Say you have, somebody goes through the process, goes all the way through court, convicted, one conviction for that. Did you get charged again with the same thing? Is there gonna be a civil penalty for a second offense?
We'll have to look at, I'll have the attorney if we can do it in that area.
I have one that I think might be a little bit touchy. I'm glad to share my personal feelings and opinions, but I think my position here is not really to look out for the welfare of the majority of the people in our county. 3.1 or 3.10, use of firearms for lawful recreational purposes and noises associated with taking the wildlife resources. I'm all for that. I love that that's there. I guess I would like to have more understanding. When we say recreational purposes, that's going out and just shooting a gun, right? So,
target practice.
Yep. There's no limitation to, you know, how much, how loud that gun is, or anything, as long as it's lawful. My question here, I guess, is we're, and maybe somebody can help me understand, maybe it's a Second Amendment thing or something, I don't know. But if someone's choice of stress relief or recreation or whatever is firearms, shooting firearms, we're saying that's okay. But if somebody else's choice of stress relief or recreation is, for example, riding a motorcycle, we're saying that's not okay. Or if someone else's is playing music, you know, me and somebody and their four buddies getting together and having a jam session. We're saying, no, that's not okay, but shooting guns is okay. I'm just asking for clarification, for understanding.
Now, Rick brought that up.
Am I picking the Second Amendment, right?
Yeah.
It was associated with guns, too, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's what the law taking a wildlife resource. It should be lawful taking. It should be in there. Because remember, Bob, we were talking about carrying them in Boston, and they shoot at night sometimes.
Well, it says lawful recreational purposes and.
Yeah, but the and in the. I don't like the and.
Okay.
But you get some shot there while you're in court. You know.
Yeah. Well, when I watch it.
It's usually lawful. That's just.
Okay. Just to be safe.
Lawful in there twice, I think we're good.
I don't think that's a problem with the lawful in there twice. I agree with that. I guess my question is. And I'm a hunter. I mean, I love to shoot, but I guess I'm wanting. And I asked Chief Gunner about this. I was like, you know, how? I'll give an example of a property. George Lynn's farm out on Evergrove. But people know where that is. Has those big pastures that's right beside Fox Crossing. I mean, so it would be okay for him or somebody, some of his friends, whatever. To stand 10 feet off that property line, you know, which would put them 30 feet from those houses and shoot skeet, you know, for 8 hours a day if they want to. But yet his son couldn't ride a dirt bike around the pasture, you know, is what.
Well, I don't have to be the decimal level of the dirt bike.
Well, a tooth broke. Well, and I'm just using that for, you know, I don't know, I just...
But John, we have it in here about making sure that the equipment has...
It's up to check.
That includes all of the applicable design appurtenances.
Right, but you could have, there are legal motorcycles that are factory legal that would be over these noise decibels that a neighbor could complain about, but while the neighbor complains about him riding a motorcycle, he's standing there shooting a gun all day long. Something to think about. It just seems a little...
Well, I mean, if I had my way, we'd be screwed motorcycles too.
I got guns and motorcycles.
Well, thank you. For me.
Oh, here it is. It's Sandy, it's 3.7. About lawnmowers and et cetera, other machines, art maintenance equipment, yada yada yada, properly equipped according to manufacturer specs. Now, maybe that. Are we trying to just single out motorcycles?
Absolutely not. That's why I use the band. You know, four people getting together with a band. I think I'm not trying to single out motorcycles. I'm trying to single out the fact that we picked out one thing of recreation and said it's okay, and I don't have a problem with that. But we're saying that, you know, this form of recreation is okay, but, you know, any other form is not okay if it's an offending noise.
The cars can be also driving a lot of noise as well. Uh-huh. Like a car that's been all souped up and makes a lot of noise and they're trying to be loud, that apparently is okay.
See, that's why I got all this started in the very beginning.
When I mentioned that, I just used Dirt Bike as an example to Chief Gunner, and then he brought that whole thing up. I was like, I didn't use that because of that racetrack, you know, but I was like, well, oddly enough, I chose the one other example to use, you know. I mean, how do you guys feel about that? About saying it's okay to recreationally shoot a gun, which I shoot them too, but I think everybody knows if you're not partaking in it and somebody's just firing off rounds 100 feet from you, it's a pretty annoying sound. That's a pretty disturbing sound.
I wonder if we ought to get the attorney's take on that.
Yeah.
I mean, theoretically, John, I guess you're right. Somebody could open a skeet range and... You know, that's a lawful recreational purpose.
Right.
But there's a private property in this camp. There's no way, there's no put up enough money in that street.
If anything, it'd be more of a private thing.
It'd have to be. How many bodies on private land?
I know where they can choose. In other words, you have to
I'm not trying to cause trouble.
That's what caused everything in the very, very, very beginning.
Yeah,
that's
right. Right. But even if we were to say it's okay,
we'll never get that back to the commission.
No, I'm not saying let's say it's okay to shoot recreational firearms and recreational motorcycles, but like, where does that stop? And then where is it okay to say one thing is acceptable but all the other things aren't, or three things are acceptable but all the other things aren't?
So you'd have UTVs, ATVs, dirt bikes.
So you crossed out 4-4, and that's where this all is.
What is it?
4-4.
4.4?
We now have the old 4.4 operating and remaining the operation of any automobile and motorcycle of the type of the car operating vehicle and motorcycle. That's all there. It's crossing out the prohibited. It's crossing out prohibited. That's only a prohibited list. Yeah.
So we're.
Yeah. So.
We don't have a look at 4.4 million.
No, I think what she's saying is we crossed that out because it says we're prohibiting that. We're saying where it's okay as long as it meets the noise level.
Which is trying to give everybody as much opportunity as possible.
And maybe that's the way it should be. Like we're saying, you know, hey, you need to be you need to be respectful of your neighbors, and you, I mean, if you've got a 2-stroke 600 cc motorcycle, you need to take that to a racetrack. You don't need to ride it around, you know, your neighbor's house where they're playing. And I'm okay with that. I just want you to bring it up. So
that's what we talked about early on, about we can't, the noise ordinance cannot possibly address every issue.
Right.
You know?
The one thing that Chief Gunner mentioned was having a reasonable time frame on recreational guns. I mean, the whole reason I went to him was to try, I mean, my thing when I called him and asked him even is I said, I want to simplify it, see if there's things we can simplify and things that, you know, that you disagree with. And of course, that's adding to it, you know, adding lawful taking of wildlife and then the recreational use of guns within a certain time period. What do y'all think about that?
I think you're going to have a Second Amendment fight on
your hands. Okay.
As far as I have to address this on my campground, because I have people come and they want to shoot, and I have the forest all out behind me. And I had to know you can shoot from 1 to 3 every day while everybody's out at the waterfalls, because most of my other guests leave. But I don't know how you can force that across the whole county.
They're coming on your property. You can say those.
I'm saying I can, but I don't know how you can do that across the whole county. But I had to set limits on that shooting.
I think just make sure that things do good. Yeah. If they are, then I'm happy with it.
The way it's written, it is enforceable. So part of the discussion is you have to identify those things that you want to regulate under the noise ordinance. So in this case, the answer to that question is you're electing not to regulate in that area of the usage of firearms on person's property. And so if you did want to add in a provision, you could. I agree with Rick. I think it would be an increased seat one to see that pass.
I'm not saying that that's what we have. I only have two other things. And one you mentioned, which is about the sheriff's office not wanting to issue the permits. I feel like, I'm not saying we have to agree, but I feel like we ought to at least discuss and respect what they're saying. You know, they're saying, hey, we don't want to be the ones. He felt like it was a conflict of interest, issuing the permit and regulating it. And so, and he mentioned to me, because I asked him, I said, well, is it common place for the sheriff's department to issue permits? And he said, no, the only two permits they issue are, what are the two? Concealed carry, purchase, and then burning. But those, you know, I think everyone would agree that the sheriff's department is the best place to issue those two. And he said the burning permit, they just do it out of convenience because you can go to any convenience store and do that as well.
Sure.
So, yeah. And he was just saying, like, you know, that, well, like, why are we issuing this permit? Like, it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't fit any standard. So,
I don't know.
What do you think, David?
It's something that we can do administratively out of a different office without an issue. The only issue, therefore, is going to be you have judgment coming out of one department. So if we put in the claim department, be Jason and his staff issuing those permits and then making sure that the sheriff's office is aware of those when they're issued so that whenever they are out enforcing, they know what's permitted. It's sometimes better to be in the same little house, so I could argue it either way, quite frankly, but I think the question for the attorney would be confirming that with it having it in two different places, that that would be acceptable. And then administratively, it's just about easy communication.
That's as long as the communication is between Jason and the sheriff's office down there, then it could work.
Possibly.
I think I personally think, you know, that that sounds like a better idea.
From my experience, one office verified compliance with other general codes and regulations. The sheriff's office is contrary to fortune.
We all have mass gathering ordinance, and we do, I think technically that comes out of my office, but typically it's the planning department, except for the applications we need those. You start to see a lot of mass gathering.
You had one more, John.
I do. The only other, this one, and I just, and I asked him about this one too, and he could not help me figure it out. Under Section 5, where it says permit procedure, it says, no permit shall be issued that would violate the intent and provisions of this ordinance. And so I asked him, I said, I'm either really confused, or this is saying we're going to issue a permit to break this noise ordinance, but then the last sentence says, no permit shall be issued that will violate the intent and provisions of this ordinance. So, we either don't need a permitting process, or we need to take that part out, in my opinion.
There are exceptions, though. You know, the agricultural exceptions, the exemptions, and so forth like that. So if you take those into consideration, then they cannot issue a permit for anything that would fall outside of those exemptions and noise levels. Right? Is that what?
Well, those are exempt anyway. Like agriculture is exempt. You don't need a permit for that.
That's true. So what would be an example of giving a permit for something?
So if I want to have a wedding, or if I want to have, you know, a benefit concert, and I'm going to play loud music until 10 o'clock at night instead of 9 o'clock at night, and I go file for that, and whoever is the one issuing this permit says, you know, yes, I think this is a good plan. It's for the betterment of our entire county. It's going to bring money into our county. It's going to bring people into our county. So we're okay with this loud noise. Oh, wait a minute. No. The permit says that this permit cannot violate the noise ordinance. Like the whole, my understanding, the whole issue of issuing a permit is to give someone the right to break the noise ordinance. An exception.
I think it'd be just like any other agency that issues permits, is that the governing body, basically the commissioners and staff, would come up with a set of policy and guidelines about the issuance of those permits.
Right.
They're not just going to come here and get a permit, we'll give you one.
No,
they're going to set up some guidelines. Things, you know, that don't go against the harmony and good order in the community.
I mean, my only thing is it says no permit shall be. It doesn't say, I mean, it says shall. No permit shall be issued that would violate the intent and provisions of this noise ordinance.
Mm-hmm. But it also says it's left up to the discretion of the enforcement officer, which would be the person issuing the permit.
But it's their conflict in each other. They're not. I don't see how they're not. It's at the very beginning of, page 5 of 9, where it says permit procedure. I mean, I guess, so, can anybody explain why we do need that sentence in there? Saying that no permit shall be issued.
That's a catch-all for something that comes up that we need to have a clue is going to come up.
Right.
We have no idea what it will be, but something is outrageous and egregious.
I think you're right there. I think that's what it's really trying to do, is just it would be a catch-all. It's not saying that no permit shall be issued that's not lawfully issued under the ordinance. It's more thinking in line in terms of something that would be very obvious but not articulated. I think it's trying to present permit with all the forms.
I think that's something that was very interesting. Okay.
So are you going to get the
All right, I'm done. I was all on research. Sorry.
No, you're fine. Anybody have anything else they want to mention?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Just when you think you're done.
I'm sorry. I really am.
No, it's fine.
But
this is good. We're looking at every aspect of this, trying to cover a broad population.
We were told this one thing a year.
We're trying to last a year.
That's how bad it is. We don't want to be too restrictive.
But you still have to remember, this is still a county without zoning.
I know. You don't know. To board member update and new business.
We did have a resignation, and so we'll be advertising that.
We got some two stars more short now. Is somebody resigning?
Yes, we, Mr. Woodson,
please
call us.
It's fine.
Okay. And so that will be advertised for, and hope to see appointment soon. And that should go before that.
Maybe there's an application already on file, but sorry to hear that. I know you're trying to talk, but
so the commission is going to look at that
and
actually
appoint
somebody.
We've already shared that resignation with them as soon as we received it, and they've already shared the applications on file, so we'll wait to see if the board
commission wants to. Okay. All right, next on the new business is our planning board training.
This is something that we will likely do over several different meetings, but one of the things that I realized at the last meeting is that most of the membership, we've got two new members, and then the rest of the membership has not had the opportunity to attend our citizen advisory council training. So several years ago, the board commissioners tried to streamline the process for citizen advisory councils. We have over 20 different boards and committees that provide advice on different topics to the board. And we try to hold trainings once or twice a year because in the state of North Carolina, it's important to understand the roles of those committees and what that looks like. So I hijack the presentation. Normally, the clerk provides this presentation to all new committee members, not just planning board. And then I usually am involved in that presentation as well to help share some general information about the structure of North Carolina. So I'm going to walk you through the presentation. And then the other thing that I don't know if all of you have a copy of is your articles that created you, as well as your bylaws. This is important information about how your meeting structure operates, and those are official documents for this board. Do all of you have copies? Okay. I'll hand those out to you then. And then I'm going to talk to you a little bit about, in general, local government in North Carolina and specifically for me as well. So if you'll pass. We'll take one.
And is Lancaster County trying to have a letter highway and moderate it?
They do some. Usually it's topic-based training, so it might be something like board of adjustment training, sometimes we'll host a school of government to talk about a specific topic. Planning in general captures a lot of different areas, and that's something we'll touch on here in just a minute. And so it's important to kind of have in the planning world, we are both generalists and specialists. So to give you an idea of my background, I have been a planner. I actually started my career 19 years ago, August 1st. As a planner. And so in planning, you cover a lot of different topics. In general, your charge is to support local government in evaluating the built environment. That doesn't mean that we don't also talk about the natural environment as well as part of planning processes, but in general, we're looking at how communities develop, and sometimes that's the softer side of policy, so it's things like the previous Human Relations Council had a lot of our planning department involved, but it can also be bricks and mortar and pavement, so you can talk about road development building zone and subdivision. So it's important to understand from the context of planning in North Carolina, and we'll get more into that. Now, Joy probably shared with you that the state of North Carolina is in the process right now of reviving all their statutes around planning. The intent is to try to clean up some of those statutes and streamline those. So that has already passed two readings, so I'm expecting that that is going to become law in the next couple of months. When it does, everything, including the charter that I just handed you, have to be revised because all the statute references will be wrong, and we'll also have to make some changes to some of our procedures likely. So the first is to talk to you generally about the role of citizen advisory councils in local government. I'll walk you through the presentation. I'm not going to read it to you because I think it can take time to do that on your own. But in general, county government in North Carolina is operated under the council manager form of government. So the bottom line is you elect county commissioners. We have five in Trenton County. That does vary across the state as far as numbers and how they're elected. We are a partisan board, and we are all at large in Trenton County. So that means you don't have to live in a certain district or be elected to the board commission. They hire me as the executive for county government, and under statute, there is a list of duties that are specifically assigned to the county manager. Then there's other duties that are assigned, and that can get rather broad at times. But ultimately, it's my job to be essentially the CEO of county government on behalf of the board of commissioners. And that means that the daily operations are my responsibility, the budget is my responsibility, and most staff directly are my responsibility, although there's nuances in county government. For instance, the sheriff's office, sheriff's deputies report to the sheriff, and he is an elected official. He does not report to me, but his HR and his finance administration, for instance, do come through the county manager. So the ultimate responsibility of the Board of Commissioners is under the legislative and policy. So what that means for you as an advisory board is essentially that you don't have the authority. So you are here to study, you're here to make recommendations to the Board of Commissioners. But at the end of the day, it does not become law until the Board of Commissioners approves that by majority vote and follows the proper procedures that are listed in the state statute. We also do have a county clerk. Many of you are familiar with Tricia, and her responsibility is record keeping. So some of what we're going to talk about today is specifically that record keeping component. I'm assuming you're all familiar with your board of commissioners. So we'll jump right into talking about what it means to be a citizen member in an advisory capacity. To be eligible in Transmitting County, you have to be over the age of 18 to be appointed to a citizen advisory council. And there are, depending on the board, there's exceptions to residency requirements. Typically, you have to be a resident of Transmitting County. In some cases, there is either is by statute or by local rules the ability to have someone that is not actually a resident in the community. You cannot serve more than two appointed positions in Transmitting County government. So if you decide to have an interest area on another advisory committee, you would have to resign from one in order to serve on the other. Also, this creates a challenge for recruitment. So you talk to your friends and you know their interests. Make sure you encourage them to apply for the many positions that we have in county government for advisory committees. No resident can serve more than two consecutive full terms in any one position. So as your terms expire, typically we will let the commissioners know that a term is expiring. And if it is your second term, we would be seeking replacement of that position. Not because we don't want you, but because it's the rules. There's a whole list in the presentation that goes over all the different advisory boards and committees that we have. Some of these are by statute, statutorily created, or they're by nature of the business that we conduct. Specifically for planning board, there is a statute that allows for having a planning board, but it is not required. However, if you do have a set of ordinances that are enforceable, you do have to have a board of adjustment. There are some communities where planning board and board of adjustment are two and the same. We are not one of those communities, but we have so many limited ordinances for board of adjustment, we rarely see board of adjustment convened. So typically that appointment is required. The citizen's role and the authority that you have whenever you come on board one of these advisory committees is to advise the Board of Commissioners as they determine policies and procedures. So the council manager form of government is intended for a board to really focus on policy and the law that they want to create in their jurisdiction, and then they direct the manager to carry those out once they are adopted. They all, your expectation. Yes, this is what keeps our partner busy. We facilitate you're expected to facilitate public discussion, particularly on the topic for your specific committee, and in this case, planning. And attendance is expected. Each advisory board has a quorum requirement, and typically that's the majority. In the case of the planning board, because of your articles of incorporation, you have to have, even if you are down to 5 members, you still have to have 4 people here because your total is 7. So some other boards have more flexibility. If they go down to only 5 appointments, they only have to have 3 people show up, have a quorum. Without a quorum, you cannot make a recommendation. And the reason for that is if you were to make that recommendation and the Board of Commissioners were to act on it, we could be sued for that. And basically, the recommendation would be invalidated, thereby potentially invalidating the action of the board. So we always monitor attendance. You may not always realize it, but we are monitoring attendance through administration and reporting that back to the Board of Commissioners. So the things that you're not involved in, one of the things you're not involved in is administration or operation of county departments. Now, of course, that does not mean that you don't have a close relationship with staff. We want you to have a close relationship with staff because we hire professionals to support the work that you're doing, make sure that you have the information that you need in order to understand the issues at hand, what the possibilities are, and be able to make those recommendations. In cases where boards try to direct staff to undertake an initiative, ultimately staff cannot do that. Staff has to work through their proper channels of chain of command in order to initiate programs, and that includes initiating studies and official policies under the Board of Commissioners. So my job as executive is to make sure that the Board of Commissioners blesses the work that we are doing at any given time, and so that by the nature of the structure means that if the planning board wanted to take off in a direction that I knew was not in keeping with the Board of Commissioners, it would be my job to raise that flag and say, Board of Commissioners, we need to have a conversation. Because ultimately, if my staff were going against the elected board, that would be against the authority from which I wanted. So, you do, though, provide input to the Board of Commissioners, and it's an important conversation because ultimately you've been appointed because you represent a cross-section of our community, and the commissioners think that you are someone they want to hear from. So we do expect for you to provide input to the Board of Commissioners. All of you are citizens of our county, so of course you are always welcome to contact commissioners individually. We do, though, encourage you to make sure that you are clear when you're speaking on behalf of your board or when you're speaking as an individual, because once you join one of our citizen advisory committees, it can sometimes be difficult to distinguish between the two.
Now, Jamie, how does that? This is a good point to review the communication with email.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we'll get to that here in just a moment. The benefits are that it focuses attention on the specific issues at hand. It encourages citizen participation, which is what having citizen advisory councils is really intended to help provide. It also gives viewpoints from across the county at the table, and it allows those recommendations to go to commissioners. There are 24 different departments that are operated under county government auspices. That means there's 24 different topics that have to be, essentially we have to try to be experts at all times. So as you can imagine, as a board commissioner, when you're left at that position, it is a part-time job. It is not a full-time job, although they put in full-time hours, I assure you, because they have to know about so many different topics in order to make proper decisions and ones that protect the county and the county's future. So there's a lot of value, and we certainly value our committees that we have on board. We do encourage you to present your views to each other, and as you've done today, you've talked through some issues. Ultimately, we don't expect all of you to leave every meeting perfectly happy. We don't expect every policy that gets adopted to have full consensus and everybody feel good about it at the end of the day. Really, what we're looking at is democracy in action. it's a matter of majority, and that means a majority of your committee making a recommendation, and it takes a majority of the Board of Commissioners to agree with your recommendation to see it actually move through. And we do hope that while each of you represents a different flavor coming from our citizens, we do hope that you also remember, as I think John Wayne said, two or three times, try and keep the public good at hand. So we do want you to think about what it looks like from all of the different aspects of the community when you're making a recommendation. We also encourage you to get along amongst each other even when you disagree, which most of our committees are really good at. We do try to minimize our political opinions at our committee members and really talk about the issues at hand at a community level. And we try to respect each other to be open and honest and provide you adequate time for discussion. Ultimately, the chair is the presiding officer of any meeting. Your meetings are recorded. Your meetings are also documented with minutes and agendas that are published for the public, and that's for transparency purposes. And ultimately, your chair is responsible to work with staff to develop that agenda, to run the meeting, and provide leadership during those meetings so that they are run. These are considered business meetings, so we do expect to run them efficiently. And then and we also want to make sure that the proper attention is given to each item being discussed. It is also up for the chair to excuse your absences. So if you're going to be absent from the meeting, we do encourage you either to contact staff or your chair to make sure that you're not going to be in attendance. Because, as you said, attendance is important. And if you miss more than 25% in any given year, you may be removed from your position on that committee. So now let's talk about the legal structure in North Carolina. There's two governing laws that our court really hopes that you would pay close attention to. One of those is the open meetings law. The basics of the open meetings law are that your meetings are open to the public, and we have public here today to hear and talk to you. The purpose of making sure that those meetings are open is to provide transparency and for you to hear feedback. The same thing with your minutes and your agenda. So those are available to the public, as well as any documentation on behalf of county business. So that's where we talk about email. Whenever it's open meetings law, very quickly bleeds over into public records law. And under public records law, anything that you have documentation as part of county business is open to the public. So if someone wanted a copy, we're supposed to be able to provide that to them. So that means even emails about county business that might be on your private account. Now, it can get very hairy when you start talking about that because sometimes some people intermingle their email. So they've got county business intermingled with their personal email. I can assure you that if a case were to come up, the judge is not interested in your emails to your loved ones. They're interested in those county business pieces. But you do need to be aware when you use your email that there's potential there. Most of the open meetings law component is handled through our clerk's office. She will help advertise for meetings, and if you have advertisements, the statutes dictate a lot of those advertising requirements and the time frames for which that can be advertised. The statutes also dictate how we keep our records and who ultimately is responsible for that. In talking about communication under open meetings law, anytime you circulate communications amongst yourself, remember that that is a public record and it can be requested. Telephone conversations, either individual to individual, are not necessarily part of violating open meetings law, but if all of you were to get on a party line, you'd be in violation of public meetings law if you were starting to talk about planning board business. You also want to be careful about whenever you utilize technology. The state statutes are out of date. They did not anticipate the internet, email, etc., texting. So most of the interpretation basically is such that if you were to have a texting group that was only planning board members, and you were talking about the planning board meeting in a group text, then you're in violation of the meeting law. So.
In other words, if any more than two communicate, then that theoretically could be a meeting.
Typically, it's a quorum. So in your case, it'd be four. But if you had two people to coffee and wanted to have a conversation, you are free to have that conversation. But if 5 or 4 or 5 of you wanted to meet and have coffee outside of the meeting and have that conversation, then it would be a violation. So, as you can tell, that also leads over into the public records law component, because anytime you have a meeting, it is documented, or it should be documented. Those minutes don't have to be overly detailed, so you don't have to stress out that you have to quote every single piece of a meeting or everything that's stated. Ultimately, those do, though, need to summarize the discussion, and they need to specifically make sure that the anytime there is an actual motion before the board, that you document who makes the motion, the second, and what the vote looks like in the end. So there's some information in there about motions as well, and in your included in that second packet, there's additional information with your articles of how you incorporated that also talks about your rules of procedure. So this board did adopt rules of procedure back in 2005. Again, those will likely need to be updated at some point, but it gives you a guideline of what, how to handle agenda items and how you, each of those board members can proceed.
Like we had tonight with all the discussion here, we are not as formal as the commissioners, but that's not, there's no problem with that.
Under your rules of procedure, you are allowed to have the public discuss after public comment if the chair allows it, and any member can request for the public to speak. You do have to be very careful with that practice, however. If you can end up in a situation where you end up with your meeting dominated, it inhibits your ability to move business forward. So you do have to be very careful to manage that. It is okay if the board, you know, feels like they want to hear from a citizen that's in the audience out of turn to do that. You just have to be very careful and have to look to your chair specifically to make sure that that meeting is running back in so that you can conduct business. The law also governs conflict of interest. So if at any point you are directly financially involved with a matter that came before you, you would need to disclose that to your fellow members and abstain from voting if there is a conflict of interest. Now, in North Carolina, that conflict of interest is actually pretty narrow. You are supposed to have receive direct financial benefit from a vote. So in the truth of the matter is, if it was a matter of your child, is your son or your daughter is involved in a business or employed by a business, and this business wants to ask for a subdivision approval, that in that case you actually do not have a conflict of interest. However, you may want to disclose that fact to your fellow board member so that if there's not a question, that you don't acknowledge that there's that relationship. But at the end of the day, you can still be able to vote on that item. It's only if you have the right financial interest.
If you abstain from voting, you will also abstain from the discussion.
Typically, if you're abstaining from voting, you would abstain from the discussion. That's correct. And the other thing is that the rest of the board have to acknowledge your conflict of interest, or your no vote is actually a yes vote. So anytime you vote, whenever the chair calls for the vote, if you are silent, you are saying yes. So I'll let you know that as well. Parliamentary procedure generally is how we govern all of our committee meetings. And if there's some information of how to follow motions, you do need to adjourn your meetings, because if you do not adjourn your meetings, technically the meeting continues, even without you here. If you come and you establish a quorum and then you have to leave halfway through the meeting and you are the fourth person here, the meeting still continues to have a quorum unless you are officially excused. So that's something to note as well. You've probably seen movies or TV shows where folks will sort of ride a meeting out as late as possible, trying to get somebody to have to leave that they don't want to vote in a certain way. So that is a true factor that can play out. Yeah, exactly. If you did need to take a break, you had a particularly long meeting and you wanted a break, you can recess that meeting and then reconvene after a specified time. Trish has a whole slide in there that specifically goes over terms of parliamentary procedure. But
yeah, I have no hope of reading that in my place.
Well, and we should probably get that to you in a little bit later. Or without
the either one.
Sure. We'll try to get that larger slide to you for that purpose. The other handout that you have includes your article incorporation. There is one change. Your article incorporation actually allows the board of commissioners to appoint your chair. whenever the board of commissioners went through all the citizen advisory commissions and trying to create consistency, because as you can imagine, we had 22 different committees. It was very difficult to keep track of a lot of differing rules. So at that point, they decided to allow the planning board to select their own chairs. But I think it's helpful to look through and to remember what you're being charged with. Some of this comes directly from state statute, and that gets at the purpose of planning. It's to gather information on past trends, present conditions, and what you can expect in the future in order to help guide development. It's to prepare and revise the comprehensive plan from time to time and to coordinate that plan for just the development of the area. In our case, we have a comprehensive plan. We do not have a lot of regulations that enforce that plan. So that's something that does need to be revised on a more frequent basis, because you're continually seeing shifting true patterns in your community. In our case, we do have some authority on the board for review and approval of subdivisions. There tend to be larger subdivisions that we come before the board. We haven't seen a lot of those in the past several years, but we always expect housing is going to return to the PSA and commercial returns for development. And ultimately, you're also a community member as far as helping folks understand what's going on around county government and particularly planning. So, you know, there's an expectation that you would be sharing information with the general public and the board of commissioners and advising them on those matters. I will walk through every section that talks about your responsibilities, but do remember that whenever you conduct hearings, you're not technically having what we call a public hearing. There's a state law that dictates a public hearing, and that actually is for the board of commissioners at their ordinances. But you can have generally hearings, or better yet, workshops, as you have on your agenda listed today that we discussed, that would allow for public input.
So, Jane, when we have in September, then what the board here will be having is not really a public hearing as opposed to a public input session.
That's correct.
So, what should we call them?
You can call it a public input session, you can call it a public workshop, but you would not call it a public hearing, specifically because of that legal connotation. You do submit a report every year of your activities in May to the board, and that covers all the different, you know, projects and components. It typically captures a lot of what the planning department in general has worked on, because we have a practice of our staff also just keeping the planning board up to date in general about the activities of the planning department. And then appeals from any decision of the Board of Adjustment can be directed, and this is part of the Board of Adjustment appeal portion, which is not your responsibility, but there is a separate Board of Adjustment, and their role is to essentially look at the rules and regulations that you have adopted, and if there's cases that appear to not apply well with the rules that are at hand in a reasonable nature, then they can apply to that appeal, and those are appealed then to the Board of Commissioners. I'll let you look over your governing document from 2005. It talks about attendance, it talks about motions, it talks about a lot of detail that's important to help you in running your meetings and making sure that those run efficiently. But the last thing I want to share with you, because I know 8:30, you're all night, is a generality about in North Carolina. So has anyone heard about Dylan? I try to make sure anytime I have a public's attention, I talk about Dylan's rule. Dylan's rule is the exact opposite of Holney rule. So if you've ever seen an article from, say, the state of Texas, state of Texas is a Holney rule. Holney rule means that a local jurisdiction can come up with any law, regulation, or provide any service that they want to, as long as it's not prohibited by law in their state. Same with Carolina, they Dylan's rule. That means that you can only do things that are specifically allowed within the statutes. That means North Carolina statutes are very thick and very involved. It also means that it takes a lot to understand exactly where those parameters are. So our state statutes dictate for local government the revenues that we collect, how we collect them. It dictates how the services that we are allowed to provide. In some cases, it tells us what services we can't provide. The reason it's important to understand that is because because it impacts pretty much everything you advise on a policy matter to board of commissioners. I'll give you a great example here. Recently, the planning board and several other boards reviewed the bike plan. One of the recommendations in the bike plan was that the county would invest in maintenance of bike lanes. However, Cascade County and all counties in North Carolina are prohibited by state law from investing money in maintaining or building roads unless they are on the county property and serving the county property. So in that case, that we are making a modification to that plan because it does not fit in the legal statutory framework for the state of North Carolina. Another example to help you sort of put framework for this, as you talk about planning regulations, the state statutes will tell us how we adopt ordinances, those public hearings, how we notice them, how many days that notice has to be out, and then how it becomes law. And then when it becomes law, it will also tell us what kind of penalties we can assess, and yet sometimes give us very narrow parameters and sometimes broader parameters. But it's important to understand this concept because what's in the state statute essentially is a roadmap for what you can and sometimes can't do.
You brought up a good point. Once these bike paths go in, who is the owner of the property underneath that bike path?
In state North Carolina, if it is part of the roadway, then there's three potential owners. It's either a private owner, or DOT, or it's a city. So municipalities in North Carolina have the option of owning and maintaining some roadways. They do not have to, but they can elect to. If they do, they receive a small stipend, the power bill funds, that allows them to help fund that activity. Never covers the true cost of that. So that's why if you live in a municipality, you might see a public works, but you won't see a public works department in a county.
Okay, so the county won't own any of these bikeways or the land owner?
The county can own a greenway, and essentially that's a linear park. But the county cannot own a bike path that's attached to the roadway. So one of those recommendations was specifically street sweepers. We would not be able to spend county funds on a street sweeper, nor actually in the rural environment of Transylvania County would we ever have curb and gutter where a street sweeper would make sense. Typically, you'll see road sections in rural areas of the county to be go off to swales or ditch lines, and that typically is what takes care of litter and debris that street sweepers would be more appropriate in an urban environment. So it's important to understand those do's and don'ts. That is one reason why we try to make sure that staff is up to date on those. I will tell you it's a continual challenge. A great example of that is that many years ago, I took municipal law for North Carolina and learned all of these statutes, actually more than just these statutes. These are just the planning statutes in revision form. So this is the new revised, simplified planning statutes that are currently being worked through and adopted. So once that happens, I'll be relearning a lot of that, even though I'm 19 years in, just because it's a good thing because previously you had to look at different chapters to kind of piece together the planning components, and some things were outdated and vague. But at the same time, that means that that's why you'll see our planning director and our planning staff go to training, because we realize that not only is planning in general changing over time, but we also see those state law changes. So specifically, we have to make sure we understand North Carolina law so that we can advise you. Are there any questions? I know that's a lot of information kind of dumped all at once, but we will look at your future meetings talking more specifically about components of planning board operations, and we've got some resources from the school of government to help facilitate those. And we'll also be making sure that we're watching these changes and start to help you navigate those changes as well if they are brought into state law.
Two or three years ago, and I don't remember whether I was still on the city board or after I came on this board, the planning group went to a meeting at the auditorium, put on my scuba coat.
Yes.
And whatnot. And I'm wondering if we're doing any of that, or is that appropriate? It was an okay meeting, let's say it that way.
Typically, about once a year in two parts of the state, they will provide a planning board. more training. We'll try to watch those and let you know when they have that training. We would encourage you to attend that. We also have access through the School of Government to online module training that's intended to basically be able for staff to be able to help deliver. So we are members of the School of Government. We look to them not only for training, but there are times where we will read the state law, and as you discuss a piece of legislation that we consider local law here tonight, we'll find a contradiction or we'll find something that just doesn't seem to add up. That's when we look to the School of Government. Not only do they know state law, but they keep up with case law. I will say, out of all your boards and committees in county government or even municipal government, the planning board is one of your higher litigated areas. That means that your level of responsibility is a little higher because, of course, liability means all of our pocketbooks in the end. So, and we, of course, want to avoid not only violating someone's rights, but also making sure that we're protecting liability.
Now, is our training, like tonight, is this going to be logged in somewhere that we have gone through certain modules of training?
We will certainly be documenting that in the minutes. So today we covered specifically for Transylvania County sort of what the roles of the committees and boards are. I encourage you, if you have questions, shoot those to me or Tricia or Jason, and we'll get you answers to those as you look through these materials. I know I went through them very quickly, but I did not want to take up your whole meeting providing what we normally do in about an hour for a larger audience. But we did want to make sure that you have the information at hand so that you navigate these very tough decisions on things like voice ordinance that are going to be very controversial, that you know where those resources are and you feel comfortable asking. Any other questions? You will not see me next time, I would at least, but I'm happy to be here tonight. And thank you for having me. Really, it comes down to the business's timeline at that point. But that permit has been issued. Mm-hmm. There's a way, I can't remember what it is.
Well, I mean, we made a recommendation to commissioners, and the commissioners have approved it. Mm-hmm. It's just that they were, I feel like we were told they were going to go get that tower going, and it's been six or 7 months now, and the ground hadn't even been broken. Mm-hmm. I guess I have a little bit of concern about that. It's almost like they wanted to railroad that through and then bring it up. Mm-hmm. And have it follow through.
Well, and we can reach out and inquire. We just don't have a way of forcing that.
And also, did the commissioners, I haven't seen it anywhere, did they fill all the positions that would be on that senior mountain?
It's actually on for Monday night to consider. We're looking at a 5-member board, and they do have a number of applicants that they'll be able to select from. And then kickoff will likely not be until after school starts to get past vacations and sort of start that process, likely September. You're welcome.
Okay. I am, first of all, of course, we're not an enforcement body. Unfortunately, we can't do anything about the dollars. We've heard your complaints and whatnot. But I'm wondering if there's some influence you can have, or the commissioners can have, with the sheriff, to
be more proactive in that situation up there. And our current ordinance has the ability to enforce what we have now. That's true, isn't it?
Yes, it is enforceable the way it is, but at the unfortunately, the structure of county government is such that board commissioners do not have the authority over sheriff nor drive. In fact, in any ordinance, whenever it's assigned to anyone for enforcement, it comes down to the judgment and applicability of that officer in that environment. That includes zoning.
Well, I would think as many calls as you've made and that sort of thing, that would be interesting perhaps to have an officer up there for some period of time taking the appropriate readings. And then issue citation for whatever is appropriate. That's my opinion. I don't know whether you as commissioner can input sheriff or not, but
no. Then I think you could as a citizen call sheriff and voice your concerns and absolutely.
But I have enforced ordinances before as well. I will say that it is a challenge to be consistent and fair. And that is one of the issues that you will find in general in your ordinance development. There will be situations that you're able to satisfy, and there will always be situations that you're not. And so not knowing the details of those calls and exactly what sheriff's officers are looking at and how they're evaluating, but I do know that it's not as straightforward and black and white as we'd like, although, you know, most of our laws are written fairly black and white, whether you're speeding or not. But in these cases, it's a lot harder to be quite so
sensitive. Cindy, I know where a lot of this is coming from, Jamie, because in general, the board is very proactive on economic development of small businesses and citizens and so forth in the counties where this is coming from. And if a business is being not devastated, but adversely affected. Mm-hmm. There ought to be some remedy for that.
It seems like in this case, the time of day is not helping.
And saying that, I still think the way everything went tonight with everybody's comments and the ability to interact back and forth, nothing got out of control, nothing got out of hand, we didn't take a lot of time. I mean, this thing, I can't remember meeting that I got up this early.
Fine, no trouble, you've been home today.
Way to go, guys.
With regard to the cell tower, you said there's no appointment with regard to the cell tower. The permit's not expired.
Look at our ordinance to see if that is written on there.
The most reasonable way to make people proceed is to let that permit expire and let them go through that process again. I know the building permits that really gets us going.
I'm not sure if they ever got a permit.
So why should that not expire and that would mean
there is a time limit on it.
There is, I believe there's an expiration, I just don't know it off the top of my head.
Yeah.
But you do have to give adequate time for construction. So they might have felt like they were gonna be forward in 6 months, but it would not be unreasonable to move forward.
Now there was some discussion that the NEPA process was what was kind of holding it up.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't believe there's any archaeological value of anything on top of that mountain. You know, but you never know.
Even when there's not anything, you know, to be found, NEPA permitting does take significant time. We are looking right now at an environmental document for a piece of property, and minimum we're looking at 90 days, even for a small piece of property. So, depending on the factors of that company, NEPA can take a while.
I use Consult with Verizon and T-Mobile, and I'll tell you, they will put stuff on hold for the drop of a hat. It's because of that.
Right.
Yeah, but I just feel like when we were making that presentation to the commissioners in good faith, because of knowing the value of cell coverage in this county, especially in the southern end of the county where cell service is very minimal. I just had the impression that they were ready to move on it. I wonder if anything can hold it up right there.
It could be something financial, it could be something technical.
Speaking of financial, they did change. Somebody bought that company, I believe.
That's right. So it's that they did the farm out. Yeah. I think that's what happened. Yeah.
Thank you all for coming. Thanks for taking the rest of the
day. You want to race up? Everybody's going to drive.
Scoot right there, not to reset. How about that? I'm going to call you for some of your notes on that noise order.
Okay. Did you get...